Well, joining us right now, we have Adam Tiller, and I can tell you what I know about Adam based on the email I received. Hi, my name is Adam Tiller. I'm a stand-up comedian, podcaster, and writer based out of Everett. So I'm going to stop there and say, are you a native Everettonian, or did you move here?
Oh, I moved here a while ago. I was living in North Seattle for a period of time, but I grew up in Minnesota and was born in Vermont, so I've been all over the country, actually.
Are you wanted, or you just can't hold a job, or what?
No, I definitely can hold a job. I don't know. I graduated. I ended up doing a stint in Las Vegas, and then I ended up coming up to Washington to go to law school. Didn't end up finishing that, and then got a job up north here.
So you have a regular job, a day job, but comedy is your love.
Yeah, I'm in the process of actually coming out of that day job, so going full-time into stand-up, or just comedy in general, not just stand-up.
Okay. Yeah. So when you say comedy, so you do the get up in front of a crowd and tell some jokes, where do you get your material from? Is it life experiences or observation, or where does that come out?
It can be kind of random. Like, I think initially when you start, you're just like trying to get jokes to work across audiences. You know, it's so hard to find something that like you would say to your friends and make them laugh, and then get it to work in a crowd full of people that has never met you before. So once you figure out that piece, then it's like you're always on the hunt for what's the next observation. And in comedy, I mean, who did you grow up with?
Oh, I'm an old fart, so I go way back. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember watching the Bob Hope specials, Red Skelton. As I got older, Flip Wilson. I mean, you know, Henny Youngman, Rodney Dangerfield. The list goes on and on. So a lot of short form comedy.
I know like two of those people.
I know. And George Washington when he was on tour, and, you know. Yeah, well. Yeah.
My grandpa always had a joke about Bob Hope. He would always say, I ran into Bob Hope's brother, No Hope.
Oh, there you go. Oh, man. Yeah, those were the golden days of comedy there, pal. Oh, yeah, who were your idols when you were growing up?
I mean, I was fortunate to, like, my family is very funny. My dad and mom both put like a premium on humor, and my dad's super smart, so like it would not only be the jokes have to be funny, but they also like have to be good jokes, like well-structured jokes, not corny or hacky,
no cheap gags.
I mean, there was some stuff that I watched that like it was, you know, cheaper, but yeah, I grew up in the car with him listening to Carlin and Robin Williams and and just like it was so weird for me when I started, because I predominantly listened to comedy. Like I hadn't gone live as much as, you know, somebody in New York or like people that where there's like this living, breathing thing that stand up is. So I was like fine on the writing side, but the actual performance, I'm still catching up on that. Like I sort of just thought comedy was all like presenting your thoughts rather than the performance aspect of it.
Well, that's where some of the guys that are really, really good at it do it. And, you know, they make it look so easy. I mean, a Seinfeld or something like that just starts talking and, you know, makes jokes out of just absolute nothing.
It's, yeah, he's a different breed. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary that he's in on Netflix called Comedian.
No, I don't think I have.
It's phenomenal. Like Orny Adams is in it, and a bunch of other comics, and they take Seinfeld when he's going to build his new hour. And I mean, he's like he works his hour differently than other people do. So he'll take like the best 80% of it and keep that year over year, and then chop off the bottom 20%. And so it's literally trying to make this thing as perfect as it can be.
Wow.
Whereas like there's different, the reason why I asked why or who you were a fan of is it's changed a lot. The internet's changed stand-up. It's changed how people think about what they put value on, how quickly you should be developing material. And it's actually kind of caused quite a, like, a clash amongst schools of thought with stand-up. Because some guys I know locally that are very strong, like, been doing this for 30 years, they work the hour that they have, and they get it to be perfect. Whereas newer people are like, I want to do an hour, and then I want to do another hour and another hour. And, like, it's the volume of material versus the quality of that hour.
Yeah, I actually was fortunate enough to become one of Jay Leno's fax comedians back in the day. So
really?
I was able to fax in jokes, and then I'd watch the show and oh, there's one of mine there. And at the beginning, it was $50 a joke. It eventually went up to $75. But there are so many different styles when you talk comedy, you know, like Jay Leno, like Chris Rock, like, you know, Robin Williams. Those are three distinct styles. So who would you say your style is? Is there anyone you compare to?
I mean, I can tell you who I really admired and when I got into it. Like, I definitely like Greg Giraldo a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of the smartest comics. Dave Attell is, in terms of, like, pure joke writing, I love his just, I mean, I've seen him before. I've watched his specials, all of that. And then, you know, Doug Stanhope is somebody that I always, like, from an, what's the right word for it? Like, his ethics behind what he's bringing on stage and what he truly thinks is funny, I've always gravitated towards that a lot. Because there's a lot of people that are going up there trying to tell the audience what they already want to hear.
Right.
And
lazy,
like a Leno,
lazy comedians.
Not lazy, it's just like, it's
formula.
It's pandering in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's easier to get people to like you if you tell them what they already agree with. But if you present a different point of view on something and it's funny, it can be super rewarding, but it's like, it's not easy, you know? And there's definitely a craft in doing. I mean, there's a lot of people that go on stage that just reaffirm the audience's beliefs about them already. And that's not, it's not necessarily hard. It's definitely profitable.
Right. Oh, money. Who needs that? Come on.
How long have you been doing this for, by the way?
Oh, geez. Radio first got into it at the University of Washington in 1975, and then became professional, got my $350 a month for it back in 77. Then I came over to Seattle in 80, was in overall, over the last, 40 years, been doing this with a little, about an 8-year break there where I was off for a while. But in the meantime, I write for Radio Online. So I actually write jokes every day as part of my early job. I have multiple jobs. And I also have some comedy clients. I write for a ventriloquist, political cartoonist, and a comic strip.
Okay.
And it just keeps me busy, and it's more topical humor. I do more on the air. I'll do experience humor, things that have happened to me and things like that. But in the meantime, I'm looking for 1-2-3 sentence material, jokes that disc jockeys all over the world can rip and read and sound like they're funny.
Yeah. I mean, how did you, I'm curious about that, because joke writing is definitely like my thing, and I write a lot. How did you get into doing it? Was it just tinkering and, like, you ended up finding an act for it, or did you learn from somebody?
Well, much like you said, you got your comedy from your parents. My mom was a farm girl from South Dakota, but she's 94 now, and she's always had a wit and a comedy to her, and I think I inherited that gene. And then just all the comedy I was exposed to over time, and even going back to the days when it was okay to listen to Bill Cosby, goes back quite a ways, I should say. But no, it's always been there. And then I get philosophical and I say, well, when did I start trying to be funny and make people laugh? And what happened was, I was going to a Lutheran school through sixth grade. They closed it down, and I was hurled into the public school. And of course, new kid, public school, the bullies were taunting me and blah, blah, blah. And I found if I could make them laugh, they didn't punish me as much. And so then I started doing that, and I ran for class president in high school, and my speech was nonstop jokes, one right after the other, and it worked, and I got elected. And it's just ever since then, I like comedy. You get around me, and things will come out of my mouth, and I just don't even think about it. It just does, because it's kind of a muscle you need to keep in tone. Because
Oh, yeah.
if you let it slack or whatever, then it gets a little harder to do it. Right now, my mind is always going 24 hours a day. So between the radio show, the writing for the different clients, I'm always looking for material one way or the other, just inspiration for material.
Can I ask something about that?
Sure.
So, like,
I'm
is the
supposed to be
stuff that
interviewing
you're
you.
Well, I didn't realize you do as much comedy writing as you're doing. And I went on your website, and I'm a good guess, man. I do my research ahead of time. But like, there's a certain like type of cleanliness that's expected with material that's being bought and sold. Like, do you ever feel boxed in on jokes that like you want to make but you can't make because it's not politically correct or something along those lines.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you kind of learn what the parameters are, and I tend to get near the edge or go slightly over, but pull back, you know. But I don't. Shock to me is lazy. I know people loved Bob Saget, and I went to a Bob Saget concert once,
Yeah,
and
same here.
the opening act was hilarious. But the Saget people were booing him to get off the stage so they could get to Saget. And when he came on, I kind of went, I think we might even have left early.
Yeah,
It was.
it's like salt, you
Yeah.
know, a little bit of it is an enhancer, and then too much of it just can
Right.
ruin. And I mean, that was when was that?
Oh, gosh. Long time ago. 15.
Early 2000s or something?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah, because I went and saw him around the same time. I went to school in Indiana, and they did comedy like usually like a big act at the beginning of each year. And Gaffigan came and Saget came, and it was such a different time too. Like, those were people had their albums out, and they would go and perform the jokes that you already knew. So people would be yelling out the punchlines
Oh, God.
before, or yelling out the name of the bit. Like, the crowds were just wild,
Oh, man.
especially when it was a name like Bob said. And he was so different than Full House, you know. It was completely different. But yeah, I do think you have a valid point about like shock can be lazy, but also I think if used properly, it can be definitely an enhancer.
I started a folder once, and I think it's still on one of my computers somewhere, our material that maybe someone can do this someday. I can't, but it's a joke, it's funny, and I put it in there and I saved it. And the one that jumps to my mind, I was talking about going back to New York, and I just don't like it. It's a little too edgy for me. They had a store called Bed Bath and Go Fuck Yourself. And that's just a little too edgy for me. And so anyway, I got you to laugh, so there it is. Comedian's reward right there.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm surprised you didn't get into stand-up, because like I do a podcast, and I have a lot of comics on, and it's just fun to like, you know, chop up this thing
Oh,
that's
yeah.
so, it's such an obscure thing. Like, you know it when you see it, but some people think they're funny, some people are funny and they know they're funny, and it's a subjective thing, but at times can be objective. And yeah, it's I've learned a lot about comedy, similar to like when I was in law school. Like, you learn it by talking about it and doing it and watching it and experiencing it.
It's been kind of a part of my life salad. I have all kinds of things going on. I mean, I've told you some of the things I do. I work for an ad agency. I have my own creative services company. I do video editing. Every year on April Fool's Day, I do a fake newscast called National Gullible Day. It's at nationalgullibleday.org, and you can see the last 6 or 7 years. And it gets it out of my system, but it's part of what I do. But I also get it out of my system. I MC events and things, and I bring my material and I let the jokes fly. So I've like MC'd, I don't know, 15, 20 lutefisk eating contests down in Ballard. I MC a thing called Julebord. It's a Norwegian Christmas dinner, and I actually get to open up with a speech, and I do a bunch of one-liners, and then I break out into a parody song that I put together, and I've been doing that for 10 years now. So I get it out of my system, but to completely rely on it would require the dedication you have that I don't.
Well, when you're doing that stuff, are you bouncing your ideas off other creatives?
No, and you know the reason why is because, and I guess I'm one of those, I tend to, I am not afraid to do that, and I have done it in the past, but it seems like when I do it myself, maybe it isn't as funny as it could have been or whatever, but it's the way I would have done it. So I was part of a morning show, Murdoch Hunter in Dallas here in Seattle for like 19 years, and there was a lot of compromise and, you know, some of the material was kind of dumbed down or whatever. And so stuff like that, just being able to go do it and get it out of my system and do it the way I want to, really is important to me. So.
Were those funny people though? Like that's the piece of it that like were they more administrative people versus actual comics or like comedian like comedy writers?
Well, I would say the guy, oh no, the guy was not a comedy writer. He was a comedy stealer. But he knew a good joke when he stole one. He has, you know, he had a mild sense of comedy. And then the woman I was with, she was kind of the loose cannon, off the wall kind of thing. So, yeah, I,
Let's burn some bridges right now.
yeah, no
You're 19
kidding. There we
years old.
go. That's funny.
Yeah, the reason why I ask is it's in a vacuum. Like I don't know that many people that make stuff that I'm like really impressed by when they're just throwing it against the wall themselves. Like that's the piece of stand up. Even though it's not all I do, like I podcast and I write and I produce a cartoon and stuff, and I do think it gives you like element of taste that it's hard to acquire if you're not actively doing that. Like to kind of, it's easy. I mean, you see comedians fall into hack quite a bit on the road, and I think it's because they're not around other comics, so they don't have that standard in of the back of the room where they go back there and they're like, hey man, you're getting laughs off some really, fake stuff. Like it's this, or you're just pandering or whatever. And I don't know. I would think like in writing rooms that would be helpful to have other really funny people that you can be like, hey, I came up with this. What do you think of it? And bounce it back and forth.
I always thought that would be fun, and I know that like, you know, Saturday Night Live or whatever like that, being in a room like that with a bunch of writers, or Conan and the Simpsons writing room, I bet that would have just to have been a fly in the wall, that would have been so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be fun. I did a brief animated series, a one season animated series with a company up in Canada for some phone game or whatever, and it was a collaboration thing, and I worked with somebody I love. She's down in LA. She's probably mid-30s or so, and you know, I thought it would be good for the old geezer and the young person, kind of a meld of ideas.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I deferred to her because, you know, this is a younger generation, things like that. I don't think it was as funny as it could have been, but it was humorous. I mean, that's the difference. There's humorous and there's funny. You go, oh, that's clever. Or does it make you laugh?
Well, is there a piece of it too where, like, as things have changed and that line's come forward, like, has food come off your plate in terms of what you can write about and what you can make jokes on? Because 10 years ago, even you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or whatever. Like, the line just keeps moving.
Oh, so, I know. Absolutely.
Like, were you finding yourself in that situation ever, like, making jokes and then be like, yeah, you can't, that joke isn't okay or something?
I watch for that. I mean, that's been instinctive. I try to keep up with what's okay and what's not. And, you know, I've just been amazed at how so many things are not. And I never did those with bad intent. I was raised on Warner Brothers cartoons, and Yosemite Sam would say, get your cotton picking hands off me. But I never put two and two together. And then I go, okay, well, I probably shouldn't say that. You know?
Oh, for sure. It's pretty wild. I mean, even it's such like a living, breathing organism in terms of all mm-hmm. that stuff. And you don't notice it until like a couple years pass and you're like, wow, that in hindsight, this did not age very well.
Well, that's the Office. Mindy Kaling was just saying, I think last week, that that show would never be made today. And that's
out of control. Have you rewatched any of those episodes?
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's the thing. There are other shows like that, and you go, holy crap, I can't believe they thought that was okay.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. So,
yes.
Yeah. Comedy is tough.
it is hard. I'm surprised you never got into it, though, especially if you're emceeing.
That's how I got it out of my system. I would do, and again, with radio events, so we'd go out and host things, you know, be standing up in front of a stadium of people and introducing somebody and sneaking a line in. So it was fun, but the whole stand-up thing, I was a judge for one of the Seattle stand-up comedy competitions, and that was fascinating. It was fun to watch, but it was interesting to me, and maybe I'm, you know, this is the inside part you would have, is that I would notice comedians would kind of get up and do the same set, you know, night after night.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that's normal, but I don't know, that just seemed odd.
It it's funny, I literally just got done doing that competition.
Oh,
Where did you judge?
Oh, again, this is 15, 20 years ago, so a long time ago.
Yeah. Because we were all over the state doing it. But, yeah, I had the same thought process with stand-up for a long time. I'm trying to, like, shift my mindset a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different than what, like, traditional joke writing would be. And there's a dedicated route that you can take with it, and then kind of a lazy route. So the lazy route would be, I'm going to do the jokes I have the same way every night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just go and there's value in that. There is, performance wise, like, even if you're doing the same material, you can do it differently. And every room's different. Every crowd's different. So that's not to be like understated, but there's also guys that, comics, that they're constantly making subtle changes, and those subtle changes can make huge impacts over the course of like an hour's worth of material.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're getting, you know, an additional two laughs per minute over the course of an hour, that hour is way better at the end. So you might be seeing the same material, but the good ones are always adjusting things, and even subtle things like inflection, expressions, like where they're looking, who they're looking at, how they draw the audience in. There's a lot of like subtle things that, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for, it's like a pitcher or something in baseball. If you don't know what you're looking for, it looks like the same thing every time, but there's a lot of mechanics going on behind mm-hmm. the scenes.
Well, the timing and stuff like that. Let the joke breathe. You know, don't be in a hurry to, you know, try to talk over their laughs to get going on to the next one. So
for sure. And then, you know, small rooms versus big rooms. Mm-hmm. Like when I started, I was lucky to get in front of some really good audiences. Laughs Comedy Club is my home club, and
oh, okay,
they gave me a lot of MC work when I started. So like, you get in front of these audiences, and it's so different from open mic nights, you know, like making a room full of people laugh versus the six drunk people in the back of a bar. There's really not a huge like ladder system. Like you go from no preparation to just do this now. And so it's totally different. And how do you work an early crowd versus a late crowd or a light crowd or a full room or a theater? Or, you know, there's a comedian, Ian Bagg is his name. He's mm-hmm. a phenomenal comic and does mainly crowd work. And he was talking about starting comedy. One of the best things new comics can do is just work everywhere you can. Mm-hmm. Work colleges at lunchtime and work clean rooms and dirty rooms. And like, don't pigeonhole yourself into I'm a this comic. It's like a great comic can work wherever they need to work.
Well, it's a muscle. Again, you're strengthening it. You're learning. It's not, you don't just say I'm going to become a stand-up comic and go out and do it. It takes all those, you know, venues and the bombs. Bombing is one of the best things that can happen to you. Oh, sadly.
For sure. It is. And I mean, this region, I didn't grow up here, but mm-hmm. it is so supportive of the arts. Like there's, I think, 5 major clubs in this region and I've performed at all of them.
Oh, cool.
There's Laughs, Club Comedy, Crocodile just opened a club hereafter, Tacoma Comedy Club, Super Funny Comedy Club down in Nate Jackson. Like we have a community of comics that these, like it would blow your mind how much travel and driving and time that all these people that I'm friends with and know, like there's a level of dedication that doesn't make sense. It's waiting around for 3 to 4 hours after working during the day to, you know, get 2 to 3 minutes of stage time in front of a good room and paying, you know, in gas and time and effort and like the sacrifice. It's not an easy life, but like these are some of the funniest people I've ever met. And I mean, there's some really great comedy happening. I had 2 buddies that just produced a show at the Neptune in Seattle this past weekend, mm-hmm. and they basically sold the doors off the place.
Oh,
so
wow.
it's pretty like we're fortunate in that we have people that are going for it, but then also like this region is so supportive of the arts that we're very lucky. I mean, just that Seattle International Comedy Competition, like we got huge crowds coming out to that. So it was pretty awesome.
Does the name Matt Reedy ring any bells? It's probably before your time. He, it has to be 30 years ago, I'm going to say. But he was, he's this guy that just said, I think I'm going to do this, and he would do it. And so he said, I want to become a radio guy, and he got on the radio. And then he said, I want to be a stand-up comedian. So he told me the tale once of he got a gig, and it was down in like Eugene, but he had weekend air shifts up here in Seattle at the radio station I was at. So he would actually go do the stand-up gig, drive back, sleep in his car until his shift started, do his shift, and then go back for the next night down in Eugene.
If you had heard some of the stories that I've heard about stuff like this, like my buddy just got in a car accident last night driving back from Portland. He's fine, but like he drove, you know, 6 hours to do 10 minutes on a show that was probably unpaid. And it's just to meet people, to work on your craft. Mm-hmm. And like, I believe it completely. I mean, the best comic in this region has done every bad show there is in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, every great show and every terrible show. It's the level of dedication is pretty unreal.
Where was the show that was your greatest show that you went, damn, I killed it? I hope somebody got that on video.
Oh, man.
Or is there not one?
I mean, during the competition, we did Edmonds Performance Center,
mm-hmm.
and that was really awesome. Longview, Washington, we did a theater down there, and I had a ton of fun at that show. I got to open for Stanhope at the Neptune when I was very new into comedy, and just doing theaters was like, I've done them more since then, so it's less of a like jarring type thing, but going from a club to a theater is a pretty intense thing, and totally different. They play differently, and there's merits to both. I still think, like, so I host a show weekly at Tony V's in Everett on Monday nights at 8 o'clock, and it's like a open mic, and we do a showcase, and that's my favorite place to perform. I think it's where I started, and I have the most fun there because I'm the loosest. It's definitely not like the best show I've ever done. Sometimes it can be rough. So if anybody ever wants to come out and try stand up and like support us, that's a great place to come and just see how the sausage is made. But I mean, Spokane Comedy Club on the east side is, when it's full, I mean, it's 300 plus people, rips. I mean, laughs. My home club is, it can be, we're very fortunate as comics in this scene, and there's a lot of great indie shows too where people put on stuff. So I don't have anything really negative to say about the stage time that I'm getting around here.
Okay, I got a question for you, Mr. Stand-Up. Is there an unwritten rule where if you're opening for somebody, you better not be funny than they are? Or is that just their tough luck?
I've heard of guys losing work because they smoke out their headliner.
Oh, wow.
So, like, they're just, the headliner, like, basically pulls them aside and be like, you've gotten too good. And it's not necessarily a slight on the person. It's actually, like, a sign of respect of, hey, I can't, like, I got to deliver, and you're getting to be too much for me to follow. I would say the comics that I like hold in high esteem would never do that. You know, there's a, there's something in comedy that exists, that in stand up that exists, that I haven't really seen it in other places, where like there's this mentoring type, bringing up the next person, where it, once you yourself have achieved a certain level of success, you then pass that back to the next person. So right now I'm doing the road sometimes with Dave Landau, and he's been headlining clubs throughout the country for 15 years. And like, he worked with Billy Gardell and Bill Engvall and a bunch of these guys. And so like, once he gets to that place, it's literally like second nature to them, be like, oh, how can I help the next person in line?
I'm glad to hear that, because in radio, there's been that transition too. Back when I was first in the Seattle area in the 80s, and that is the 1980s, there was a lot of, you know, people would feel threatened, and they wanted to keep you down because they had their gig and stuff like that. And especially I've noticed in radio in the last, I'd say the last decade, more and more people are just trying to help others. And because radio, again, some people are saying it's going away, it's dying. There was just an article in the Times the other day about, with all the electric cars, that the AM radio might be a thing that will just go away because it uses juice. And you got so many other things that it could be used for, so...
Is it using that much juice?
I don't think so. I hope not. I would think, yeah. I mean, we're not going to make it to grandma's house, because...
Like, come on, Elon. Like, leave something in there.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I do. I mean, so I started a podcast, and we transitioned to YouTube with video. And I think there's just so much saturation in that space. Like, it's... People have in my living room right now, I have audio equipment that's probably similar to what was in a radio station 20 years ago. And the entry point, like, it's just so accessible now. So I think the volume of content has gone up so much, and a lot of it's really bad. You know, like, you have a great radio voice. Like, when I started podcasting, it was so bad, man. And it's still... is you do this every day, you know, it's a muscle. Like, it's a difficult thing to do, actively listening and
thinking where you're going next. And yeah.
Yeah, it's not people that are great at it make it look easy.
Well, where can people listening to this podcast find you? I've already mentioned AdamTillerComedy.com. Where else?
Yeah, so YouTube, my podcast is called Fatim and Friends. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I was fat. My older brother called me Fatim, so I hated that joke. And
then you turned it into a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So, Fatim and Friends on YouTube, and I've had a bunch of different guests. It's a storytelling themed podcast, but I've had people come on and tell different guests. My cousin was on the TV show Life Below Zero. His name's mm-hmm. Glenn Villeneuve. And then I've had professional poker players, different entertainers, Drew Barth, who was on radio for a while, just a lot of business folks, all different types of stuff. It's probably not PG content a lot of the time with comics. So
it happens. That. Yeah,
it definitely happens. So that's on YouTube and then wherever you get podcasts. And then if you want to see me live on December 31st, there's a live show. My friend Corey Michaelis is putting it on. It's everettcomedy.com. It's at the Historic Theater. And if you use the code Adam, ADAM, in all caps, you'll get 10% off.
I thought you should say they'll charge you $10 extra.
$10 extra, but it's going to be a good lineup. The headliner is Tyler Bowe. He's coming from Portland. Very funny. Will be for everybody, and I'm excited for it.
That's great. Well, awesome to get to meet you and to chat with you, and really appreciate it. And keep in touch, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. And if you ever want to come out to a show, please reach out to me. I'd love to have you come out, maybe get you on stage a little bit.
I don't think that'll happen.
He's dysfunctional
in a fun kind of way.
Tim Hunter on KRKO.